You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner, Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio every Thursday at this time with Prout and Saturday with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan. Dennis Prout is not here today, but the rest of the gang is, including Heidi Cartwright. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Ron. It's great to be here this morning. It's Thursday, August 22nd, and I can't believe that we're getting to the second half of August already. But we certainly appreciate all our listeners out there, and we love hearing from you. So we ask people who have questions if they want to text them in or call them in or email them in. And how do they do that, Ron?
You can phone or text this hour at 947-0023. That is the 231 area code, 947-0023.
Right, and I want to introduce who's here with me today. I have Nathan Prout, who is an advisor with our firm, and he's also in charge of client accounts.
Good morning. It is great to be here today.
And then at the far end there of the table, we have Deanne Jennings, who is our director of operations. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning. It is wonderful to be here. Welcome to all our listeners. And Dennis did want me to say he apologizes for not being here this morning, but he had an unexpected last-minute backpacking trip that he was really excited to go on. So I think he's going to picture rocks or something like that. So he's super excited about that.
I think maybe you could call in next week and say, Dennis, I won't be in. I had an unexpected camping trip pop up.
There you go. I hadn't thought of that, but that might be a good idea.
Just when you thought you heard them all.
Yeah.
So my article today that I'm going to talk about comes to us from the Wall Street Journal, and it is written by Laura Sanders, and the title of the article is, Are You Using the Right Tax Breaks to Boost Investment Returns? So many of us rushed at the end of last month, beginning of this month, if you remember, there was a big dip in the market. We had several days in a row where the market went down, and, you know, people get a little stressed about that and about the growth in their account, and they start thinking, is my mix right? Do I have enough cash in my account? But these are very valid concerns, and Nathan is going to talk about some of those ideas later in the show. But there is another question that investors should be looking at, and that is, how are my savings spread across tax-sheltered savings accounts? So this answer to this question can have a big impact on you. And what they're talking about with this question is how your accounts are registered. Because when you the registration of an account tells you on how that account is taxed. So tax-sheltered accounts are called qualified accounts. And there are an array of qualified accounts out there. There's traditional IRAs and 401ks. There's Roth IRAs and Roth 401ks. There's health savings accounts, 529 accounts. And then on the other side, we have taxable accounts. These are not tax-sheltered accounts. These are what we call in the business non-qualified accounts. They are like regular money, like your checking and your savings account in the bank. That is a non-qualified account. The way to keep it straight is a non-qualified account does not qualify for special tax treatment. A qualified account does have special tax treatment. So it means that there are special rules for them, which makes them a little trickier. But that's one reason and something that we spend a lot of our time working with our clients, developing a strategy as to what kind of account people should have and what assets they should have in different types of registrations. So, for example, some mid-career savers who put everything in traditional IRAs and 401ks rather than keeping some in a taxable account or non-qualified account can find that they don't have ready access to cash for ready emergencies. This is definitely true for people who are under that 59 and a half, where there's a penalty for taking money out of those accounts. So what they're saying here is don't forget, when you're saving for retirement, which is very important, of course, you also want to save in the bank something to use. We call this an emergency fund a lot of times. And we usually recommend that people target like 6 months of expenses, whatever that number would be, as a goal for you to have money in the bank. What that allows you to do, it's a buffer between you and you having to take a bad decision in paying bills or meeting some kind of obligation. By having an emergency fund, it can keep you from having to go to credit cards or having to pull money out of an account where you would incur a penalty. So there's another dilemma people can get into, and this article goes to many baby boomers who are diligent savers face a different dilemma. Often they had no access to Roth or HSAs, Roth accounts or HSAs, health savings accounts, for decades. As a result, they'll receive years of required withdrawals from their traditional IRAs and 401ks that are highly taxed. So what they're saying there is those required minimum distributions that come along for those traditional IRA and 401ks can really skew your tax situation if you have large balance accounts. And so to make this clearer, let's use an example. This example comes right from the article. It says Jeff and Donna Martin are a couple from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. They recently found out this very dilemma. He's 64 years old, a retired police officer who is now director at security of another company. She, the wife, is a 62-year-old associate at a medical testing firm. For decades, they have saved in employer plans, and they have since transferred their funds over to traditional IRAs because they don't need them for living expenses, and they were planning to delay withdrawals until they have to take it out, and their age says that number is 75. So they don't need the money. They're not planning to draw on it. They just wanted it to grow as much as possible. But the ramifications of that decision means that in their tax situation, and here they're saying assuming a 5.6% rate of return, they could face a 32% top federal tax rate on their income at age 75 when they'll have IRA withdrawals, meaning RMDs, Social Security payments, pensions, and that's far above their current 22% rate. So when you add those RMDs into the equation, that was going to bump them up to a higher tax bracket. And the gentleman says, I never realized that this could happen until I saw the big picture. So what this couple is doing, to prevent that situation from happening or to mitigate that situation is they're planning to convert 70% of their traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs before they reach that RMD age. So this is just an example of how having money in different types of accounts can affect your tax situation significantly over time. So let's go into a few of these different kinds of accounts. Traditional IRAs and Roth accounts. Well, Roth accounts are considered the gold standard for several reasons. Withdrawals are tax-free, and account owners do not have to take distributions or RMDs. Roth contributions aren't tax-deductible, but they are tax-free on the way out. By contrast, contributions to traditional 401ks and IRAs are deductible, but they have forced withdrawals that are taxable at ordinary income rates. So that is your required minimum distributions. With traditional accounts, growth and income within the account are tax-deferred. With Roth, they're tax-free. And that can make a big difference, can it, Nathan, when you have, like, you have to put on a roof and you need $50,000.
Mm. Yeah. And something else, just a quick shout-out to QCDs as well, just going through the Martin situation here. Yeah, they have pensions, which are a bit of a rarity these days. But with their Social Security income, maybe they don't even need their RMDs at age 75 in this scenario. What they could do is do a QCD instead of an RMD and still avoid that extra income if they didn't hypothetically need it.
Right. Or they could even do a combo of Roth conversions and QCDs later. So
right.
There are ways to change your situation when you're looking down the pathway and you see a certain situation approaching. Just a couple of notes on HSAs or health savings accounts. These are paired with high deductible health insurance plans so that you have to be eligible. You have to be in one of those plans in order to contribute. But say for a family contribution up to $10,300 in 2024 are deductible going in. So the money's deductible going in and it's tax-free coming out. So this is one account where you actually get to use all of the money that you earned, which is pretty unique and can be very beneficial for tax efficiency. So they are tax-free coming out if they are used for the eligible medical expenses. Growth in income within the accounts are also tax-free when used for the eligible expenses. This makes them a very unique account. But one thing that many people may not know is savers who pay unreimbursed medical expenses out of pocket can keep receipts, let the account grow, and then request a tax-free reimbursement later, even decades later. So you can be working, you can be paying for medical things and hold those receipts and then take a lump sum later on, and there's no tax or penalty on those withdrawals. So HSAs can be an outstanding rainy day fund. They can also be used to pay Medicare premiums in retirement. So focusing and putting money into those programs can be very important for the future. So another type of account we mentioned are 529 accounts. These are accounts that parents use to save for education expenses. Contributions aren't federally tax deductible, but sometimes your state may give you a tax break if you are in that state plan. But growth and withdrawals are tax-free if used for eligible education expenses. Account owners can also switch the beneficiary on an account without owing tax if the new one is a family member. And that even includes cousins and stepchildren. And there's a lot of options there of what family members are eligible for the 529. So and then we're going to go into our non-qualified accounts. Remember, we talked about these are the regular money. the money outside of a retirement plan. And most savers have these in a bank, or you can have it in an investment account as well. So the tax breaks for taxable accounts can be good. And let's go into some of those. Typically, there's no tax on growth until an asset is sold. Long-term capital gains on sales qualify for tax rates of 15% or 20%, much lower than rates up to 37% on income like wages. So capital losses can also offset gains. So here we have, Nathan, and you, I know you've seen that with some of our clients, where they may have a asset that they sell that has a large gain, but we can offset that by selling something that has a loss.
That's right, yeah. Yep.
All right. So what the bottom line is, to maximize returns in a long-term portfolio, you want to focus on tax-saving vehicles as well as regular investments or those non-qualified accounts. By combining all types, it gives you more strategic options as the landscape changes. Because as the tax law changes with Congress, as they move things around, the more different types of money you have, the more flexible you can be in pivoting to a different income stream or withdrawal idea based on how that will affect your taxes. And we want you to keep as much of your money as possible.
I was going to say, as you're planning for your future portfolio, I mean, it is possible that tax brackets could change in the future, correct? And so just to keep that in mind as you're thinking that through.
And actually, we have that coming up. We talked on a recent show about the sunset of the Tax and Jobs Act. Mm-hmm. So 2025, if nothing changes, is the last year we'll be under these current tax rates. And then they will revert back to the rates before the Tax and Jobs Act.
Yeah. So I kept hearing John Sluice's voice during this article.
In the background.
Yes.
Our question, actually. Does it make sense to wait until 2026 to start doing a Roth conversion if the state of Michigan is waiving the tax in 2026? So the state of Michigan will waive some tax on retirement income. Is that right? Not all, right?
I don't believe it's all.
No.
I don't have those numbers. But what I can speak to is that's just the state of Michigan tax, right? So you also want to remember at the federal level, and those were the taxes we're talking about that will be sunsetting and then readjusting to those previous amounts. For example, the 12% bracket today used to be the 15% bracket, and that's where it will go back to if nothing is done. But on the Roth conversion, you have those years of gain that can be tax-free that you should think about. And also, the federal tax can also, and usually your federal tax is a lot more than the state tax. So those are all considerations. But like we said, everybody's situation is different. And so it's really good to go in and talk to a financial professional and sit down and say, does this make sense to me? I like this idea. Does it make sense in my particular situation?
And according to AARP, in this tax year of 2023, Michigan started their four-year phase-out of its retirement income tax. By the year 2026, they say, the tax year of 2026, pensions and income from 401k and IRA withdrawals will be fully exempt from state income tax.
I actually have a chart of that.
Phase-out?
Yeah, the phase-out.
So it'll affect different people. Of course, there's all kinds of exceptions and
twists and turns. It all has to do, you know, birth year, all that stuff. So you want to check all those variables.
And, of course, too, without knowing where the federal tax brackets are going, yes, it might save you that 4.25% on the state side, but it might... federal rates for you might be higher than at that point too. So yes, that could be a strategy, but you might want to straddle the fence a little bit on that one and do some now and some later as well. So
good point.
Next we have Nathan, who's going to be talking to us about investing in companies at times of crisis. What do you got, Nathan?
Yeah, so in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, Cruise ships around the world became stranded at sea as port officials flatly turned them away. Passengers spent days trapped on board amid baseless speculation that these ships were at the epicenter of the crisis. It was a tough time to be in the cruise business. Within a month, stock prices for major publicly traded cruise lines were down about 80%.
That's significant.
That is, yeah. And this is according to Todd, who is an equity analyst who covers travel-related industries. And again, this article as well is from Capital Group. Also, American Funds is another name for them. So Todd has been following this industry for years, but this moment of crisis prompted him to take a closer look. There was a widespread belief that no one would ever get on a cruise ship again, explains Todd, an avid cruiser himself. That struck me as a gross overreaction. So following weeks of intense fundamental research, including close collaboration between Capital Group's equity and fixed income teams, the conclusion was clear. The major players in the cruise industry could survive a prolonged shutdown thanks in part to a unique provision of their debt covenants that allowed for some repayment flexibility. That prompted us to take action. Todd identified several attractive travel-related companies at the time. So fast forward to today, and nearly all travel-related companies have enjoyed a remarkable recovery from the dark days of 2020. Cruise lines in particular. More people are cruising today than before the pandemic, thanks to a combination of pent-up demand and a focus on making cruise ships more enjoyable for passengers of all ages.
So, Nathan, I was noticing on your chart, how much did it change the prices for the cruise lines between April 2020 and August 2024?
Yes. So that was travel and leisure companies, again, is this index, and it was up 232% between April of 2020 and August of 2024.
So that's a lot more than the 80% drop that they experienced in that previous period. So that's very interesting.
Absolutely true, yeah. And we'll get into some other examples of that as well here in a little bit. So questioning conventional wisdom. The cruise ship saga was a textbook example of how to invest in companies at times of crises. It's a specific skill that requires a certain type of investor, one who is willing to question conventional wisdom, comfortable with taking risks, adept at interpreting company balance sheets, and fine with losing sleep. For some, it becomes the hallmark of their investment style. My favorite investment opportunities are the ones where any educated person can pick up a newspaper and know why they should avoid a company. But our analysis leads to the opposite conclusion, says Chris Buckbinder, a portfolio manager with the Growth Fund of America. I look for opportunities where others see despair.
I sort of like that statement because, you know, find the silver lining to the cloud, right?
Well, yeah, and that's always been Warren Buffett's philosophy too. Mm-hmm. So case in point, Boeing. Safety issues plaguing Boeing 737 MAX jet. In addition to COVID-related supply chain troubles and chronic labor shortages, these have weighed on the company's shares, plunging the world's second largest aircraft manufacturer into crisis mode. However, even with all the bad news, the fact remains there are only two dominant players in the world of commercial aircraft manufacturing. There's Airbus, based in Europe, and Boeing, based in the United States. Both are solid companies with long track records of success, virtually no competition, and airplane order backlogs stretching out for several years. Boeing is obviously in a very challenged situation today, Buckbinder acknowledges. The company has mis-executed on a number of fronts, but I keep coming back to the idea that their planes are still sold out for the next 7 to 8 years. If Boeing is able to solve its manufacturing issues, then I believe the company will be able to sell all the planes it can make at an attractive price, he adds. Our long-term investment horizon allows us to seek to take advantage of these types of opportunity. A change in company leadership, such as a new CEO, may also signal that a turnaround is in the works. Boeing's freshly minted CEO started last week. Another crisis that could lead to potentially attractive investments is a recession.
Well, that doesn't sound...
Hooray! While no one likes recessions with their associated job losses and financial dislocations, they are a necessary part of the economic cycle, and they often result in discounted stock prices on companies that otherwise trade at a premium valuation.
Yeah, and you know, this is a question we get a lot from our clients, Nathan, is people, they hate putting money into their 401ks when they see their statement and the loss is bigger than what they contributed. But this is what you're talking to here is in a recession, it's like the stock is on sale and you're buying more shares. So that's the silver lining in that picture.
Yeah, and that's why dollar cost averaging can be such a useful strategy.
Sure. So on that, what you just said, Monday, I think it was August 6th, or Tuesday, August 6th, mm-hmm. the market, how far did it go down? A big drop that day?
It was
1,000 points
drop.
Or so, 1,100 points?
The
Dow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But all the three exchanges went down.
Yes, we all noticed.
over the next 2 weeks, I think, 3 weeks, certainly, it rebounded practically all the way. So right. During that period, people who stayed in the market, people that have mutual funds and their IRAs, were making good money, is that right? Because it was climbing?
Yeah, because some of these, like Nathan's talking about, these mutual fund managers that are talking here, they're saying, hey, they're looking for like stocks that go down because the potential, the long-term potential might look a little bit better. So.
But I mean, general accounts, though, in general, yeah. When the market drops off like that, you're like, oh no, I've got my retirement savings, probably just took a huge hit.
Mm-hmm.
But was there a good rebound because the market climbed 1,000? Mm-hmm. Dow Jones climbed 1,000 points in a few weeks.
That's right, yeah.
Because they were buying at lower prices?
Yeah.
Everybody jumps in.
Right, yeah. So if you just, again, continue with your dollar cost averaging plans, which, you know, might just be a fancy way for continue with your paycheck contributions mm-hmm. as
yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know, then you're buying more shares at a discounted price and capturing then more of that rebound opportunity.
So. Got it. Mm-hmm.
So, if we look at U.S. stock prices in aggregate, every recession over the past 34 years has hammered the S&P 500 index, but subsequently produced a powerful recovery period. From the market bottom, two-year returns have ranged from 47% in the aftermath of the early 1990s recession to 105% after the brief COVID-related contraction. So if we look at the COVID-19 sell-off, 229 of 2020 to 323 of 2020, there was a 34% decline. The recovery after 1 year was 78% positive. The recovery after 2 years was 105% positive. If we look at the global financial crisis, October 9th of 2007 to March 9th of 2009.
Which most people remember.
That was a painful one, yeah. There was a 55% decline. The recovery after 1 year was up 72%, and after 2 years, it was up 103%. The dot-com crash.
Which I remember. I don't know if they
remember. I don't remember that one.
But yeah. I remember that one.
That was March 24th of 2000 to October 9th of 2002. There was a 47% decline. Recovery after 1 year was up 36%, but after 2 years, it was up 50%. Or the 1990s recession. So July 16th of 1990 to October 11th of 1990, it was a 19% decline. Recovery after 1 year was 34%. After 2 years, it was 47%. And this is according to Capital Group, as well as Standard & Poor's. Return figures, of course, represent the cumulative total returns for the S&P 500 index. So times of economic turmoil certainly can create an opportunity for Contrarian investing, says Steve Watson, a portfolio manager with the New Perspective Fund. And while he doesn't need a recession to find distressed companies, they do appear more plentiful when the economic environment is faltering.
Funny how that happens.
So there's also a prime example from the early 1990s when Watson was assigned to cover European utilities as an analyst. Utilities in the United Kingdom had recently been privatized, and it was a hated sector. Investors weren't accustomed to privately owned utilities at that time, and a weak economy was hurting their revenue base. Moreover, the UK's Labour Party opposed privatization and was favored to win the upcoming 1992 elections. Against this backdrop, UK utilities appeared attractive on a valuation basis, low enough that Watson decided to recommend them even in the face of substantial economic and political risk. His views was that these companies needed to be privatized so they could tap the financial markets, modernize their facilities, and ultimately raise prices. So there were two 20% declines after these utilities were privatized in 1990, and then there was a 75% return after a UK general election from April of 1992 to December of 1993. The UK's Conservative Party, led by Prime Minister John Major, wound up winning a 21-seat majority, taking pollsters and markets by surprise. The UK utility sector skyrocketed, and it was no longer a hated sector. It was my first big call as an analyst, Watson remembers. So, focus on the fundamentals. One of my fundamental beliefs as an investor is the stock markets swing from excess of optimism to excess of pessimism and back again, Watson says. It's a feature of the markets that is driven by investor psychology. I believe we can capitalize on those swings to generate superior returns for our shareholders. It's important to remember, Watson stresses, the market isn't always wrong. He still has scars from investing in banks too soon after the 2007 to 2009 global financial crisis. The financial sector took a long time to recover, and banks posted lackluster returns over the next decade. That said, there are times when crisis investing can pay off handsomely for investors with the confidence of their convictions, the skill to conduct deep fundamental research, and the ability to take a long-term perspective when others are focused on short-term problems. It's about trying to see beyond the current turmoil to identify a brighter future where value can reemerge, Watson explains. And besides, everybody loves a good comeback story.
Yes.
This also highlights, as Heidi was talking about, different investment account types, different investment types as well. So this could potentially be an advantage if the situation is right for you. I'll try to add as many disclosures as possible here. To also have mutual funds that are actively managed, of course, which is one of their advantages in your portfolio, that has people looking at this sort of things and running these analyses for what makes sense to invest in or what might be undervalued. So,
by the way, when you started with the cruise lines, I looked up a couple. Royal Caribbean Cruises stock, if you can see on the graph, our panelists here, pandemic time crashed down. It was about $25 a share.
Yeah.
It's now up to $158.
Right.
Fairly steady climb with a drop off. They had a fall off there in April of 22.
Yes.
I don't know if that was what was that?
2022 was not a good year overall.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then, but look at Norwegian Cruise Lines for their 5 years. They did not recover as nicely as
that's true.
As Royal Caribbean. Mm-hmm. They're still down to about where they were when they crashed in pandemic times. Mm. Or Deanne Jennings may have some stats for us.
Absolutely, Ron. The National Federation of Independent Business Economic Policy Uncertainty Index increased in the year before every presidential election since 1988. The current increase of 25 points from November through July ranks as the largest at this point in the election cycle of any other election year, and that source is the National Federation of Independent Business. Unemployment rose to 4.3% in July 2024, with non-farm payroll increasing 114,000. However, the number of unemployed individuals increased 352,000 to 7.2 million in July 2024, which is higher compared to the 5.9 million in July 2023. And that source is U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And as we were doing this statistic, we talked this morning. News came out. Was it yesterday?
I think it was yesterday. Yeah. That they were off like in April by over 800,000 or something like that.
Exactly. From March of last year to March of this year, 818,000 jobs were not created.
Right.
They said were created.
It's the largest correction ever. Right. So keep that in mind.
When we read these numbers, they could be corrected at a later date.
Exactly. August 14 marked the 89th anniversary of the FDR signing of the Social Security Act into law. This year, the trust fund will pay out $1.5 trillion to benefits and more than 71 million Americans, which is roughly 21% of our entire U.S. population. And that source is Social Security Administration.
That is just a huge number.
Yes.
$1.5 trillion.
And we know with the baby boomers, it's only going to grow.
That's right.
So we're kind of at the beginning. 26% of global employees say they work from home on schedule package delivery days to avoid porch pirates from stealing their packages. In 2023, the estimated value of packages stolen from the doorsteps of Americans exceeded $8 billion, and that source is MarketWatch.
That's just really sad.
I was shocked when I read this stat. I mean, I knew it was happening, but $8 billion. And this is just a fun stat. The NCAA college football season kicks off this Saturday when number 10 ranked Florida State will take on Georgia Tech in Dublin, Ireland. For the 2023 fiscal year, Florida State's football program generated revenues of $91.5 million compared to $65.8 million for Georgia Tech. And that source is Sportico.
Still not enough to pay that Social Security bill.
Revenues keep coming in, though.
All right, we'll wrap up this episode of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City. Nathan Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings, thanks all for being in.
A Roth IRA offers tax deferral on any earnings in the account. Qualified withdrawals of earnings from the account are tax-free. Withdrawals of earnings prior to age 59 and a half, or prior to the account being opened for 5 years, whichever is later, may result in a 10% IRS penalty tax. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Traditional IRA account owners have considerations to make before performing a Roth IRA conversion. These primarily include income tax consequences on the converted amount in the year of conversion, withdrawal limitations from a Roth IRA, and income limitations for future contributions to a Roth IRA. In addition, if you are required to take a required minimum distribution, RMD, in the year you convert, you must do so before converting to a Roth IRA. Stock investing includes risks, including fluctuating prices and loss of principal. Any company names noted herein are for educational purposes only and not an indication of trading intent or a solicitation of their products or services. LPL Financial doesn't provide research on individual equities. Value investments can perform differently from the market as a whole. They can remain undervalued by the market for long periods of time. Because of their narrow focus, investments concentrated in certain sectors or industries will be subject to greater volatility and specific risks compared with investing more broadly across many sectors, industries, and companies. Investing in mutual funds involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Fund value will fluctuate with market conditions, and it may not achieve its investment objective.